In your notes, if you're following along, it's under the heading in Joshua, Jordan is flooding. Chapter 3. And Joshua rose early in the morning. They set out from Shittim. They came to the Jordan. And he and all the people of Israel and lodged there before they passed over. The end of 3 days, the officers went through the camp and commanded the people, as soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God being carried by the Levitical priests, then you shall set out from your place and follow it. Yet there shall be a distance between you and it, about 2,000 cubits in length. Do not come near it in order that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. Then Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Joshua said to the priests, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on before the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the Lord. The Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And as for you, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant. When you come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. And Joshua said to the people of Israel, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, here is how you shall know that the living God is among you, that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amazites, and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is passing over before you into the Jordan. Now therefore take 12 men from the tribes of Israel, from each tribe a man. And when the soles of the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off from flowing, and the waters coming down from above shall stand in one heap. So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as soon as those bearing the Ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped in the brink of the water. Now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout this time, throughout the time of harvest. The waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside, Zarethan, and those flowing down toward the sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, were completely cut off, and the people passed over opposite Jericho. Now the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel was passing over on dry ground until all the nation finished passing over the Jordan. Just a couple of bullet point thoughts tonight. The first, as we're speaking of victory and we're seeing God's hand in this event and this miracle that's taking place, here again is a prerequisite. We saw it in chapter 1 last night. Here again, consecrate yourselves. For tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. This is in verse 5. Consecrate yourselves. What does that mean? What does it look like? It's a setting apart. It's a dealing with matters of separation from the world, of holiness, of surrender to the Lord, of coming under his authority, of shedding the things of this world. That's the idea of consecration and holiness. And this is how God operates. I'm about to do wonders in your midst tomorrow. But now you have a responsibility in this. There is a price that must be paid. Many people who are kind of following Christ. They come to church. They've heard things and maybe not fully understand. Maybe some of us here, we've got a mindset that God owes us something, that it's kind of the new guy who shows up out of college and he asks, you know, where's my office? What are the perks? What are my benefits? I want everything that's coming to me, and I haven't done anything yet to earn it or to deserve it. Now, I'm not talking about earning anything from God. Everything he gives us is grace. But there is a price to pay. God says, here's what I want to do for you, but you need to put yourself in a position that you would receive it. And the position that we must be in is a position of holiness, of living for God, of surrender to God. So he says, you need now to come. We're gonna deal with that. It's going to be the first portion of prayer Brother Frank's going to lead us in tonight, is this matter of consecration and holiness. I think it's important in our praying. Often we dive right into God, here's what I want and need. And we bypass a lot of things that are really more important, like holiness. I say this frequently. I know I've said it here in the past, but we need to be careful in our times of praying. Most of the prayer meetings that I've ever attended, when we say, does anybody have a prayer request? It's typically about things that are very temporal and earthly. And that's what God's concerned about. That's good. He's concerned about our healing. He's concerned about who you marry. He's concerned about the job and careers that you pursue, what schools you go to. That's important. But I have rarely, and maybe never, have heard somebody in a prayer meeting raise a hand and say, I have a need. My heart is so full of pride. And I need God to remove that. I have a need. My mouth, my language. I know it's not pleasing to God. And I need God to break this. I have a need. I have an addiction. Well, maybe we've heard some of those prayer requests. I think I could say that. Or I lie. I have a tendency to lie. It's so easy for me to tell untruths. I don't hear those things. But what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and you're healed of cancer and you got a good job and you found a nice spouse and your car's running well and your kids are getting all A's? What does it profit? Consecrate yourself. God, I'm coming to you in great need today. You know my heart. Cleanse me. Purify me. And this was the call. We imagine wrongly that a holy God will simply do the bidding of unholy people. Tomorrow, I will do wonders among you. And God gave instruction to Joshua, and he passed it to the people. As soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of your Lord being carried by the Levitical priests, set out from your place and follow it. There'll be a distance, and the distance given, we're told, is about 1,000 yards. So 10 football fields. The Ark of the Covenant would be way out in front. It would lead them. It would guide them. Don't come near it in order that you may know the way you shall go. Let them lead. And God says, for you have not passed this way before. What a promise. What a faithful God. He says, you don't know where you're going. You don't know what's coming. Trust me. I'll lead you. This ark in the Old Testament, we know, is a type of Jesus Christ. It's a picture of Jesus Christ yet to come. We don't have time to go into that specifically. But we know this is a representation. The presence of God dwelt there within the ark. And that was Jesus, and that ark was a place of atonement, propitiation. Paul writes in Romans, it's the mercy seat, the covering there, and that's who Jesus is, our propitiation for sin, the covering, our atonement, where the blood was sprinkled. And so the message here if we can just be very simple tonight, is keep your eyes on Jesus. Let him lead. Let him go before you. Looking to Jesus, Hebrews 12. He is the author, the beginning and the end, the perfecter of our faith. Trust him. He is faithful. That's really the whole theme and message of Hebrews 11. It's the faith chapter. And then it runs right into chapter 12. So in Hebrews 11, it's going over all these saints of God, men and women of old, that had done marvelous deeds and walked in obedience to God. And then the attention then is called to this great cloud of witnesses. And what's the writer trying to tell us there in Hebrews? All of these that have followed after God, they've gone through difficulties and hardships. They've been persecuted. They laid down their life for the sake of God. But in that, God has been faithful. This cloud of witnesses has arrived. They've attained the reward. They are men and women of faith that God has honored. And how did that happen? It's because God led them. God kept them. And then ultimately it shifts there. So we've got this great multitude of those who are the faithful witnesses of God's protection and leading. And he says, you should be inspired and motivated and encouraged by that. But don't let your gaze settle so low. Look higher unto Jesus, who is the perfect example of the one who, even to the point of death, pursued the call and the will of God for his life. And no matter what it led to, the suffering and the shame, the difficulty, the challenges, he says, just pursue, just like Jesus did. There is a reward to come. Keep your eyes on Jesus and pursue him and his way, and he is faithful. Verses 15 and 16, we're gonna jump toward the end of this chapter. And we read then that those bearing the ark came as far as the Jordan, these priests carrying the ark, and they were dipped in the brink of the water. You see the little parentheses in that 15th verse? Now, the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of harvest, just in case you didn't know. The waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan. The city of Adam, commentators aren't certain. Some say it's 17 miles north. Others say it's 30 miles north. Either way, pick the distance. Just imagine the scene as these priests now come to a roaring. Now, I know today, if you've seen pictures or if you've been to Israel, the Jordan is not a real imposing river. In some spots, it seems you can almost jump across it. But it's very different today than it was at this time. We're told the geography has changed there, some due to man's kind of redesigning that region. But we're told that this area could be a mile wide, and it's flood season, and so this is a rushing river. If you know anything about strategy and war, if maybe you look at some of these documentaries that are out, very interesting, and rivers are very key in battle, and bridges are very key in battle. And so oftentimes that's the first thing that has to be dealt with, because we need access from this side to that side. We don't want to bomb all the bridges. Sometimes that happened because that was part of strategy. But we don't want to destroy them. We want to use them at some point because we've got to get our armies across. And so they're very important. And if there's not a bridge there, or if it was bombed out, the first thing they do is send in the I don't know what they call them. Are they the engineers? The Army Corps? And whoever else has to go in, and they build these kind of inflatable bridges. We can't cross even small rivers with armies just trying to get through the water. So this wasn't just, you know, God said, I don't want you to get wet, or I want to make it a little bit easier. It was impossible. This was impossible. And so here they come into this rushing river, and these priests stand there. Now, we quickly go on to the rest of the story, and some of you may be very familiar, and we're not very impressed with it anymore. But imagine, and I don't know that this is true, but I don't know that it's not. You step in the water, and God stops the water 17 miles upstream. How long does it take for that water of 17 miles to finish rushing through where the priests are standing? It doesn't say that immediately God just opened the walls like he did in the Red Sea. He says he stopped water upstream, and here the priests stand in the water. And the water's still rushing. And they have no idea what happened upstream. And they wait. And they wait. They wait. And they wait. What do you do when you wait? What do you do when you're standing in the water and there is no sign that God is doing anything? You just wait while the water still rushes under your feet. God, are you in this? Did we miss something? Are we going to look the fool standing in the middle of a river? Nothing's happening. God, how long? Maybe some of you are in that place. You're standing in the river. You've been given a promise by God. You're waiting for a miracle, but it just doesn't seem to come yet. You don't know what's happening upstream tonight. You don't know what God's working in places that you cannot see. And here's another thing that I don't get. As I was reading this a few weeks ago, This parenthesis just kept jumping out at me. Now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of harvest. And I don't know, I'm drawn to these types of, why the parentheses, why is this thrown in there? And then as I thought about it, it kind of bothered me a little bit, or maybe at least wonder, God, what's the deal with this? Truthfully, I think I'm a little bit more focused on it because there have been seasons where God has done this in my life, and I don't quite like it. God, you had 40 years to bring us across this river, and you pick now under these conditions? The most difficult, the most challenging, the most fearful. God, why couldn't you do it a couple months earlier or a couple months later? Why are you taking us here now? I don't know. Well, I do know. Because God tells us in other places. We talked about it, maybe it was Sunday morning. We talked about Gideon. You know, sometimes God brings us into these places for a very particular reason. And again, it's not about me. Sometimes God puts us here so that we might learn about him and his faithfulness, his power. God, this just doesn't look possible. And God says it's not. And so you need now to trust me more. And Brother Peter read from Ezekiel 36. And, you know, that's such an important thing that often we forget. I alluded to that a little this morning. It's about God. It's not about us. And so in that deliverance, God is saying, I'm going to honor my word, and I'm going to honor myself, and I'm going to glorify me, even though you don't deserve it. This is nothing about your deliverance. Your deliverance is to glorify me. And God is glorified, like in the story of Gideon, when God whittles down his army to 300 men. We mentioned the odds the other day. That was every Israelite soldier needed to kill 450 of the enemy's armies. Impossible. And God said so. And he said, Gideon, here's why I'm doing it. When you get victory, I don't want anybody to think it was because of your skill on the battlefield. You have to go into this completely. You're defeated before it starts. So that when you walk out victorious, everybody says, they're God. They're God. I've been praying that in my life, in some very hard times. I said, God, and trust me, I'm not trying to sound spiritual. It has taken 58 years to learn some of these things. And saying, God, we need a miracle in this thing. This thing is big enough to crush, and sometimes it feels like it is impossible. And God has helped me to say, God, it's not about me and my desires, my plans, my comfort zone. God, I need to see your glory in this. I need to see your hand in this. But beyond this, as I read through much of the Old Testament, it's that same idea. God, the nations around me, my neighbors, my friends who don't know you, my church that watches, God, when they're seeing us, me, in a place, when they see you in a place of defeat, when they see you in a place where there is no way out, and God intervenes, there has got to be a pointing up toward heaven and saying, the reason that God brought us into the Jordan River at flood stage, and the reason we went through some real hard times waiting and wondering, it was because God was waiting for the moment that he would show forth his power and his glory, not just for me to go home and have a peaceful night of sleep, but for everybody around me to say, their God, his God is able. His God is glorious. His God is powerful. His God is worthy. And that's what God's doing here. The Jordan is flooding. I kind of pulled that title because that's kind of how I would have approached God. Okay, Joshua, here we go. It's time. And I would have turned to God and said, but God, Jordan is flooding. Can't we wait? For his sake, no. Stand. Verse 17, those bearing the ark, they stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. All Israel passed over on dry ground until the 2 million people crossed over that river. And I see the parallel in Ephesians chapter 6. Finally, be strong in the Lord, the power of his might. Take up the whole armor of God that you might be able to stand in the day of evil. And having done all to stand firm, stand. See, so the deal in Joshua 3, that promise wasn't for us. But Paul's letter to Ephesians and that church, that promise is for us. So either way you look at it, stand firm. Stand firm. Maybe flooding. The waters may be stopped up far away, it says, far away. But that miracle's coming. That victory's coming. May not see it. May not know it. Stand firm. We're going to pray tonight. And we need to, I hope, find encouragement from this chapter. That as we come to God in prayer and we're looking for these miracles and we're believing him for the answers and the fulfillment of his promise, Let's not be discouraged. It's flood season. The waters are still rushing around your knees. Stand firm. And let's come to a God who is more than able tonight. Brother Frank, would you come and begin and lead us in this time of prayer? And let's, again, just be fully engaged tonight as we come to God in prayer.